This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 117 for January 24th, 2008.
Rated T for Teen.
Sierra Entertainment proudly presents World in Conflict, the most intense strategy game ever created. 5 out of 5. Easily one of the best gaming experiences of 2007. GameSpy.com. 9.5 out of 10. GameSpot.com Editor's Choice. A PC Gamer Editor's Choice Award winner, 93%. IGN.com's 94% Editor's Choice. War is coming home. World in Conflict. Available now for the PC.
Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are Senior Executive Editor Chuck Osborne.
To infinity and beyond.
Senior Executive, or Senior Editor Logan Decker.
Whoa. Hey.
Senior Executive Intern Norman Chan.
What are you going to do without me? I'm like your main man.
What the hell?
That was a Cloverfield quote.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Swingers. I haven't seen Cloverfield yet, so yeah.
That's because you're a loser.
Nobody saw it, even the people who went to the theater.
Our former editor-in-chief, Gary Whitta.
Hello there.
And finally back. How has it been since you've been on? It's been a few weeks.
Gary?
Yeah, that's right. I've been out of town and unavailable for various reasons of varying validity. But here I am.
That's very inconsiderate of you guys to deprive.
I haven't even done my own podcast. Like, even the Game Theory podcast has been kind of up and down the last few weeks. So you're lucky to get me.
So were you activated? Were you on Your Majesty's Secret Service?
Yeah, I can't. I for obvious reasons, I can't talk about that. But you should appreciate the short time that you do have with me. Because one day I'll be gone forever, and then you'll be sorry.
We appreciate each and every hour we spend with you, Gary. Really.
We have enough recordings to fake you.
like that South Park episode where Isaac Hayes was kidnapped by Scientologists or whatever. So they killed off Chef. That's what we'll do. We'll turn you into a child molester on the show. That'll be great.
Since I only basically say the same 7 or 8 things on every podcast anyway, it wouldn't be too difficult to fake me, I don't think.
First listener to make a Gary Whitta soundboard wins a free copy of Peggle.
No. No soundboards.
I'll throw in some other games, too. Copy Kane and Lynch. Unopened.
Oh, wow.
Open.
Okay.
Unopened.
So, to finish our introduction, we've also got our producer, Jeremy Williams.
Hey, guys.
Okay. So on to the news. If we're done making fun of Kane and Lynch,
I don't think we are.
No, you have more.
No, we'll just I mean, it's an open. It's always open season on Kane and Lynch, isn't it? Like we'll just drop things in throughout the show.
I suppose that's true.
Long ago, I saw you. I'm not supposed to start yet. Sorry.
Not yet.
Yeah, we're not to that part yet.
I'm sorry. Logan. I was
Logan. Wait for your cue.
Right.
Yeah, everybody who normally like cuts off after the beginning, keep listening because there's going to be something really, really great coming up.
Yes. So, announcement: Battlefield Heroes from EA. This is not your typical Battlefield game. They've gone back to World War II. They're letting you download it for free, and it's not out yet, but they've announced that it will be available for free. It's a third person perspective, cartoony kind of Team Fortress 2-ish looking thing. With it's ad supported and it's got microtransactions for upgrades. What do you guys think about that? Battlefield fans.
It's free. I'll play it.
Yeah, I like free. I'm in with free.
I mean, there's nothing to buy, so I'll try until I get bored.
Did they go with the cartoon approach? Was it TF2 related, or do they just want to separate it from the retail releases?
I think mass appeal. I mean, combination of multiple things. It's going to be third person only, even though it's being developed by the DICE, the same guys who did Battlefield 1, 2, and 3. It's clearly not Battlefield 3, and I guess that's an important thing because Battlefield 3 hopefully will be more like Battlefield 2.
Sorry. Do we know which DICE studio is doing it? Because they've got DICE in Sweden, like the main guys, and then they've got DICE Canada and maybe another studio, I forget.
I don't think they said it, but I want to say Sweden.
Yeah. So the main team, which is kind of interesting.
It's impossible to look at that, at least the sample piece of art that I saw, and not conclude that this was at least some way inspired by Team Fortress 2, because it is a very style.
Yeah, I mean, it's I mean, I'm sure even if that's not how they're thinking of it, it's influencing them in some ways, because it's a lot like the TF2/Incredible style of character design. But what do you guys think about the whole microtransaction route?
I think it's a big deal. I think EA is going to take it pretty seriously, and I mean the story made New York Times, right, or Wall Street Journal, one of those, you know, newspapers, because it is going to be one of their flagship titles, but that's going to be, you know, purely micro based on fees, and it's something that's worked overseas but hasn't worked here before.
Right. I mean, a lot of people have tried the microtransaction thing, but nobody's. I mean, it's never really paid off in any significant way.
Have they tried it here in the States?
Well, not in this country.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to Korea, it's like all about microtransactions.
Right. Jeremy, what'd you say?
I was asking if they'd ever tried it here in the States, because it seems to me like it would be phenomenally successful.
Yeah,
it's been tried with several games, actually.
Yeah. What was there? Was one?
Has it ever been tried by a company the size of EA? Because if anyone's going to make a go of it, it's going to be them.
Well, yes, because it was tried with.
It was tried with a bunch of MMOs.
Oblivion was the first one that really kind of tried to do that here.
Horse. Come on, one horse just a microtransaction revolution.
It was a microtransaction, you know.
It was a cool horse, man.
I think it was a lot of MMOs. Like, there have been MMOs like Sword of the New World, where it's free to play until a certain level, and then you have to pay if you want to get access to a later levels, which means more armor, more weapons. There was that freestyle basketball game where it was free to play until a certain level, and you could pay to convert your real money into the game dollars to buy like clothes and equipment and stuff.
Oh, there was also War Rock, which was kind of a Counter-Strike knockoff that was free to download. You could basically rent weapons.
Probably the most famous example is going to be Project Entropia, which I know hasn't been a huge game here, but. There's one guy who I actually met at CES who had made like $250,000 buying and selling things through that game.
Right. Uh-huh. And I don't really approve of the model myself. I don't like the idea that somebody who has like more spending money on hand, once I've already gotten the game, I don't like that somebody can, you know, buy better weapons. I mean, and just, you know.
Well, we don't know what it's going to be. So, I mean, here's a good question. Assuming the game comes out and it's free, and it's you get a really solid, fun third person multiplayer shooter, right? Maybe let's say the equivalent of Team Fortress 2, but third person. What would you pay for? What would you pay like $2 or $3 for, or even $5 for to get in the game?
Well, if the last couple of Battlefield games have been any indication, you pay to get the good weapons.
I mean, what would you be willing to pay for?
Me?
I'm asking.
Not a lot. I mean, depends on how good the game is. Maybe I'd put in a few bucks for like a good weapon in like my favorite class. But I just don't like the idea that you know the people with more money get an advantage.
Right.
And I playing online and multiplayer games is supposed to be a level playing field, and this totally upsets that.
Well, they may not give you an advantage for extra money. They may just allow you to modify the settings of of each match,
right.
Something
like customizable
that.
Customizable skins, your face in the game.
I guarantee you, it's going to be the same, you know, Battlefield unlocking model, but you have to pay.
But even with the Battlefield unlocking model, the weapons you unlock weren't necessarily better. They were different. Like, you know, a gun might get access to a gun which had stronger bullets but had lower ammo count, or you could only fire one shot at a time. So it's just it would just give you more options as opposed, you know, to fit whatever playstyle you had, as opposed to giving you like, you know, the best gun in the game that everyone wanted.
Hey, now Dan, does that guarantee come with the same weight as your guarantee last week that those Assassin's Creed PC specs were not correct?
I was kind of right, because the hard drive.
No, you can't weasel out of it, because the thing that you were really talking about was the RAM.
Right. Yeah. Well, also Ubisoft did pull those specs down, so We're not sure. They could be further optimized by the time they officially announce the specs. But basically, what happened there was that that Ubisoft, well, there was a leaked set of specs that seemed really high that I didn't believe. And then Ubisoft last weekend, somebody probably mistakenly put up a support page for Assassin's Creed PC version, which had very similar system requirements. And so everybody, was in an uproar online about how that was, those were the official requirements. But I contacted Ubisoft, and they still won't, confirm those things. Like their PR guys still haven't seen any official system requirements, so they can neither confirm nor deny at this point. But yeah, it is looking kind of likely that the recommended number for RAM is 3 gigs, which is silly. I just don't see how they can actually use that much RAM. Like, I mean, I guess it's possible. Am I just talking to myself here? Is anyone else going to jump in?
I always thought that XP could only handle 2 gigs too. But after we did that story, I kind of looked it up, and there are several people reporting that it varies from machine to machine, and some can actually handle 3 gigs. So I don't know.
It depends on your motherboard.
Okay. But they're looking at a tech support nightmare here.
Right.
Right.
Can I do this?
I know, but I kind of led us off a different path, but I know from past experience that Ubisoft's console to PC ports have always had like some very, very high system specs. So that's why in this case it didn't surprise me at all.
Right. Wasn't Splinter Cell Double Agent like the first game we'd ever seen that
Shader Model 3.0 card.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then there was another, was, I think it might have been Rainbow Six that Vegas, required a dual core.
They were both based on the Unreal Engine 3 engine, and unless they do it the way they did Graw, which is to have two separate development teams work on the various versions, they're always going to put the console, at least with the new games, prioritize development on the console side and then bootstrap it onto the PC.
Right, but I mean the infuriating part is the Xbox 360 has what, 512 megabytes of RAM in there.
But it's the way its cores are arranged are a little different, so I'm sure it's
that's
CPU, the programming though, is optimized. I don't know exactly how the architecture works, but it's optimized for that.
512 megs?
It's 512 is a video memory, right? I think it's 512
sure.
Video memory.
Well, this is academic. I mean, we don't even know how, if those are going to be the final.
Right.
Specs.
But it's looking likely that they are. But
so that Battlefield Heroes. that's some game.
Yeah.
Long ago I saw you.
No.
Not yet. Sorry.
Well, back to the unbalanced game thing again. I assume you guys all read about the Team Fortress 2 upgrade, the more details that PC Gamer UK released.
Yeah,
on this.
Yeah, totally. So it came out earlier this week that Valve, in addition to releasing new maps, they're planning on doing a new map, one of the Badlands remake. They're also planning, they announced this, I guess, a couple months ago that they're going to tweak the classes, but we didn't know to what extent. But now it looks like they're going to actually add a lot of weapons to the classes, unlockable weapons. And I think on some forums online, people were just, they're going nuts over it because they think it's a terrible idea.
Every class is going to have two new weapons that will be unlocked once you get half of the achievements and all of the achievements per class.
Yeah. Starting with the medic class, which is what they announced. They announced one of the weapons, it's an ability called Overhealer, and it permanently doubles the boost to when you're healing someone to double their health.
It's a permanent health boost at the cost of never being able to go Uber or having a slower Uber charge.
Yeah.
Now I'm willing to bet that they would they're going to have a setting for this and when you set up a server, so whether or not to use these weapons. So I don't think it's going to be a huge traumatic they've ruined the game kind of thing. Even if the majority of people don't like these weapons, I don't think it's going to be a big deal.
Do you feel any differently about this as opposed to the pay-for scheme, where it just takes time to unlock these weapons as opposed to actually shelling out cash?
A little bit, because time is money, yes, but you can get like a a kid who doesn't have a job to pay for all this stuff, but he can spend some time with it, and if he's good enough, you know, he'll progress. Although, I mean, it always has kind of struck me as odd to, like, when I get the idea that you want to reward people for you know, playing a lot and playing well,
right.
But you give the people that are already doing really well a further advantage over the people that aren't that good. And I understand the reward mechanics, but from a balancing perspective, it's kind of weird.
Hmm. But you know what? It's worked really well in games like Call of Duty 4, where people spend hours and hours playing on servers just to level up to the 55, which is the highest level. And Will Smith and I have been playing every night just trying to level up, and we're around, you know, level 36, 37. And we're doing all right against the people with the stronger weapons. We get the kills. We may not be at the top of the charts every time, but it's still a lot of fun, and it keeps us wanting to play more just to level up.
Right, and you know, you see somebody else using a weapon, a cool weapon, it's like, oh, I want that, you know, and that drives you some. But you know, at the same time, it never really kind of leveled out in my mind. It's just kind of a weird system, because you know, you're rewarding, you're giving the people that are already better than everybody else, even better tools to kill other people with. It's obviously not breaking the game.
That's where I think you might not be right. I mean, who knows how it'll come out, but when Battlefield Heroes is released. But I don't think it'll be better weapons. I think it'll just be more options and different weapons and different styles of weapons.
Right.
And maybe maps. I mean, the content can be anything.
So for TF2, the first medics are getting the special treatment first. So do we know anything else?
No.
Nope,
no.
That's it.
Just
plus, we know
yeah.
The two maps. One is Badlands, and the other one is called Gold Rush. The way it's described is it's kind of like it's almost like a control point based, I think. Yeah, Dust Bowl like segments.
So, guys, you're a big TF2 player. What do you think about the prospect of extra weapons?
I'm surprised to find that people on forums are complaining.
We don't want more.
That doesn't sound like the internet community at all.
Yeah, it's usually more of a gimme, gimme, gimme kind of thing.
I will reserve judgment. The thing that sounded... I wasn't really that bothered about the new weapons. I'm interested to see the new Gold Rush game type, because that sounds like it's a little bit similar to The Hunted. It's not The Hunted, which is what I really right. wanted all along, but it sounds like maybe the closest we might get to it in Team Fortress 2.
Can,
so
can you describe
escorting?
It sounds like you're trying to escort a minecart from point A to point B. And I don't know if the minecart can actually be destroyed, but it moves along the rails more quickly depending on how many escorting players you have near it. But if an enemy player gets near it, it either slows down or stops. I can't remember. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to work. But you know, like I said, it seems to be the closest we've seen to a Hunted type map. So, but I just really just wish they would just do a plain old Hunted for Team Fortress 2, because that was always our favorite.
Mm-hmm. I think there are too many jerks online that would make that would ruin the Hunted. I
think there are just too many jerks online. Period.
Well, yes, that too. But the Hunted work really well in land environment, but on public servers, when you know some 12-year-old kid randomly is assigned to be El Presidente, he might not play the way you want him to play, and ruin the game for everyone.
Yeah, I have to say I'm going to sound like an old grump, but which I probably am, but. That's one of the reasons why I just don't play online that much anymore, is because, you know, back in the day when I could play Quake 3 without nobody expecting me to have a microphone on, that was great. Now I don't want to talk to people while I'm playing.
That's true. Chuck never wants to talk to any. He doesn't want to talk to us when he plays with us.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to hear Dan Stapleton because he sounds like a 12-year-old chattering. I don't want to hear that.
Yeah. Chuck doesn't want to be talking to us right now.
I know. Why am I here?
So speaking of Steam games, Stalker Clear Sky, the prequel to Stalker from GSC Game World, has just been announced as a Steam exclusive, so you won't be able to buy it on shelves. You can only buy it through Steam.
Crazy.
That's awesome.
And that's good news.
Yeah,
well,
we saw...
How is that good news?
I think it's good news for the developer.
Absolutely.
Stalker definitely, I think, had found its second legs in Steam, because I don't think it sold that well in retail, and it was THQ, I think, who put it out. And obviously, with that deal, THQ takes a big chunk of the money. Obviously, Valve is going to take some money now that they're kind of digitally publishing it, but I think they're going to reach more of their audience and get a better deal than they did with THQ.
Yeah, it's good news for PC gamers, because like when I talked to the Savage 2 guys last week, one of the reasons that they said they wanted to go online only was that by charging $29.99, they're able to charge that much instead of charging $49.99 like if they went to retail. And hopefully it's going to be the same situation here, where they're able to, just cut off, $10 or $20 right off the top. And also it's going to be better for them, because hopefully they'll have less piracy concerns by going through Steam.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Well, maybe not. I mean, even games that are on Steam get pirated eventually. Half-Life 2 got pirated.
It's harder to pirate them.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Half-Life 2 did come out in a boxed version, so that probably made it easier.
That could be true as well. But I mean, at the same time, I mean, it's good from those perspectives, but it's bad because it cuts out, everybody who isn't on broadband, and Stalker is a single player game. So people that aren't on broadband.
I think if you've got the system to play a game like Stalker, you've got at least.
You think so, but we get plenty of mail from people that are just in rural areas that don't have access to Steam, and there's also a fanatical anti-Steam camp out there that just doesn't want to give up any personal information, doesn't want somebody knowing when they fire up their game. They don't want to check in to Valve servers every time they start up the game, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, it's got its positives and its negatives there. So,
sure. But I think over the years, though, that community is going to erode. Because I remember I was looking through some of the comments from last week on our podcast, and there were some guys who were talking about, yes, I go out and I pirate, and one of the main reasons why I'm a pirate is because these games are just too darn expensive. Well, hey. Here's something that you can do. You can buy a game. It's cheaper than if you went to a retail store, and you can just download it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it does something to combat piracy, but I'm not sure what the pricing is going to be for Stalker Clear Sky, though. It's entirely possible that being an established brand with Stalker, they'll go ahead and charge the full $50 and just pocket the extra.
If they are without a retail release, then that would be highly unfortunate, and I would have to call shenanigans then.
Well, you may end up having to do that. I would not be at all surprised if for a relatively big name like Stalker, they charge the full.
Well, okay, but why would they have to charge that much? Just because it's a big name? I mean, without a publisher, without a retailer to go through, they have more of the ability to dictate what the price is going to be on their end.
They don't have to charge anything. They want to charge as much as they can, and people will pay. So I think that at least for the first offering, it's going to be $45 to $50. And on Steam, things do gradually come down. But
there are also lots of like launch day sales on Steam.
Right.
And here's the opportunity also that they could bundle the original Stalker maybe at lower costs, without having a new SKU. My question is, who's going to do all the marketing for them? Typically the publisher buys, ads online and in magazines to promote their games, but if they're essentially self-publishing with the help of Valve for distribution, who's going to help them with that?
Well, probably Steam. I mean, Steam has a very high subscriber base, so anytime you go into Steam, you have those pop-up ads, there probably will be one for Stalker.
Plus, they can go online and with their microphones and say, "Hey, have you guys checked out Stalker? It's really fun. I'm having a great time. Come join me."
Oh, God, that would be horrible. So our next item is not strictly PC news, but since the major media outlets can't tell the difference between a PC and an Xbox anyway, it could just as easily have been PC news. Fox News had a segment... I think it was early last or late last week, where they were talking about the graphic sexual imagery and full frontal nudity in Mass Effect.
Yes. Yeah.
Panic.
And they had a guy from EA on there, or was he a BioWare guy or an EA guy?
No, he wasn't an EA guy. It was Jeff Neely. He's a game journalist.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So he was on there just saying, no, that's not true at all. And they would pretty much just ignore him and say, oh, it's got this terrible nudity, and just keep going on and on about this just blatantly false and ignorant stuff about a game they haven't had any experience with. They obviously didn't have. They probably hadn't even seen like the YouTube clip of the sex scene in there.
Well, wait. To be fair, I watched this report, and when Jeff Keighley was finally allowed to speak and challenged their quote-unquote expert, the first thing he said was, have you actually ever played the game?
And she kind of
went, no. It was an absurd thing to have done.
Right.
Why would I have experienced the thing that I'm here, trying
exactly.
to destroy?
And she tried to justify it by saying that she spent a lot of time researching the game on websites by playing YouTube videos, probably searching specifically for that sex scene.
Well, the Fox News woman who was like anchoring the report said that. She said, I went on YouTube and watched some clips and then said, I didn't see anything that bad. Right. But again, the woman from... I don't know what her expertise
she was an author.
Is supposed to be.
Yeah, she's
okay.
A psychologist and an author.
As soon as you kind of destroyed that and said, you're basically just saying things that aren't true. There's no full frontal nudity. There's no explicitly graphic sex. What you're looking at is about 2 minutes of overall content in a game that lasts about 30 hours.
Yeah. It's like 30 seconds of half a boob.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So they quickly kind of killed him. They didn't. It's interesting that after he said that, they didn't come back to him again, and right. then they just brought in other experts, all of whom were part of the same pylon mindset of they instantly moved to even though there's nothing here that's actually worse than what you could see on like NYPD Blue or whatever, the fact that you're actually experiencing, you're interacting, you're playing it. Is really bad. And then the woman went on to say there's a new study out. I actually want to find out more about this. She said there's a new study from the University of Maryland which apparently has concluded that children are unable to tell the difference between reality and video games.
Right. What the hell is she talking about? That is like one of the most insulting things I've ever heard. I was playing games as a kid. I'm like probably starting when I was probably 9 or 10 and I had pretty much no trouble distinguishing between video games and reality. That was not a problem I had.
Who said that?
Did you see the letter that the EA wrote to Fox?
Right, right. Yeah,
I thought laid their case out quite well.
Right. There was a letter from Jeff Brown, who's the VP of Communications at EA, addressed to Fox News, asking for a retraction or a correction. To all this stuff that they were saying on this segment, it's kind of funny here. He says this isn't at the end of it is this isn't a legal threat. It's an appeal to your sense of fairness, which
well they are fair and balanced.
Yeah, how do you expect that's going to go? But he lists in detail like a bunch of things they say, like your headline above the televised story read, "New video game shows full digital nudity and sex." The Fox News voiceover reporter says, "You'll see full digital nudity and the ability for players to engage in graphic sex."
But you know what would really have
pissed
them off?
Let's not forget, this is the same news outlet that also had a Chiron that said, "All out civil war in Iraq, could it be a good thing?" I think that was my all-time favorite from Fox. Look, can we just file... I started getting tired of this story the second Dan... intro'd it, and it wasn't anything to do with Dan's intro. It's just I feel like every week, we're covering some of this rubbish. Can we just file this under, in the Fox runs hysterical nonsense file and move on?
Because it's just so frustrating.
I saw you.
I just want to point out that the internet has taken its own vigilante justice on this psychologist, over at Amazon, where she has, according to Kotaku, she has 330 reviews of her most recent book.
Oh, it's more now.
279 of them are 1-star reviews.
and the best part, if you go to the Amazon page, I mean, this is probably really wrong, but she has a book out, which is the book she pimps on the segment, because obviously, that's the only reason she did it, is to sell her book, and, for her own agenda. But the reviews are all they don't look like forum troll posts. They read like real reviews, as if the people posting there actually read the book. And not only are there like 500 reviews now, all the reviews are one stars, have been tagged as helpful.
Well, you know, I haven't read the book, but I've done extensive research on it. And in my opinion, it's just not that good. So.
That's exactly like the kind of stuff.
There was a study done where people can't tell the difference between this book and a pile of crap.
She's basically become the Cain and Lynch of psychologists.
It's a very, very ugly book.
Now, I just think that the reason, you know, like Gary said, that there are a lot of things like this that are like every week there's some ignorant media outlet going on about how terrible games are without knowing anything about them. But what I thought was really interesting about this story is the fact that EA took the time to respond and has asked for a retraction, and is, you know, doing it publicly and actually standing up for their game. Which is, I thought
the best point that they made was when they pointed out that the level of explicit, you know, nudity and, you know, sexual intimacy, however you want to define it, in Mass Effect is no worse than anything than in about a half dozen different network primetime TV shows that Fox distributes.
Oh, it's far worse.
But their argument, though, is going to be that because it's interactive, that makes it so much worse.
What's interesting is those sex sequences aren't interactive. They're just
not interactive at all. Right. And they could not have picked a worse game to use as an example. I mean,
yeah,
I know. Mass Effect, first of all, you can play as both a male or female character, right? And, I mean, you it's not like you press the button and then you engage in that sex scene. You have to work and develop the relationship and actually think about the relationship before you can actually do it.
Well, Norm, see, that's even worse because that's just training children to have premeditated sex. Interactively.
I made it.
Can we just call these people what they are and whenever we see them, we should just treat them like what they are, which is trolls with a cable deal. that's all they are.
Well, they're looking for the drama in the story. And unfortunately, you know, Jeff wasn't providing that drama. He wasn't saying, yeah, this is a terrible game that, you know, kids are going out there, they're having sex in this game. He was telling the truth, and it didn't tie into that, so they, you know, that's why they ignored him.
Right. It happened, there was a famous case recently to do with airline congestion. I don't know if you saw this, it's kind of become a popular YouTube clip, and if you go to any of the anti-Fox websites, it's a clip that they show quite a lot, where they had an aviation expert on, and Bush had just done something like he had relaxed, he had opened up some additional air lanes to the FAA to try and release airline congestion over the holidays, and Fox were reporting it as a very popular thing. They had an expert on there who basically went on to debunk all the myths of why this was a good thing. You know, he was actually an expert in aviation, said opening up these different air lanes doesn't do anything, it's just a PR move, Bush has actually made things worse, blah blah blah, and they could not get him off the air quickly enough. I think it was scheduled to be like a much longer interview than it was, but because it was clearly going, he wasn't even spinning things. He was kind of, you know, unraveling the spin and saying, "Look, the reality of it is this." That you could see the two guys on the Fox side of the screen just looking increasingly horrified, and they shut him down very quickly and had to fill the rest of the time because he wasn't, playing the game that they were hoping he would. So, I mean, we all know that it's just bullshit propaganda, and video games are going to continue to be in the firing line. And it's not, we know it's not just Fox. You know, it's all the outlets.
To be
love.
Fair and balanced.
I mean,
CNN does just as much crap.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, so in the wake of the Heath Ledger tragedy, I was watching a little bit of CNN, and they were actually talking about, well, you know, what is this Joker character? What did it do to him that, you know, he became so despondent after playing the role that he couldn't sleep at night, and did that have anything to do with his death? And, you know, I could see how that could be extrapolated into, you know, well, you know, should we allow our kids to read Batman comic books? You know,
it was fairly shocking watching some of that Heath Ledger coverage, where it was just nothing but speculation because it was on the air like 30 minutes after the body had been discovered, and they had six
they need to fill the airspace with something.
But what That's great, but what makes it easier to do is when you're doing it that kind of speculative on the fly coverage where you have no information, is that every minute you spend quote unquote reporting something, you have to spend another minute then correcting and say, well, we've just got new information that says that everything we told in the last minute in fact wasn't true, and so they actually get to fill twice the amount of airtime.
Well, what would be really nice is if you know Fox were to actually you know issue some kind of correction on this, but they probably aren't going to. Anyway, moving on.
Can we get to the part where Logan reads the letter? Because that is really the only reason I'm hanging around.
Not yet. We're getting there.
Are you saving it for like the end of the show or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So
Bongo, I saw you traveling. I was going to do a speed run. Sorry, but I got
not
cut
yet.
Off.
Not
sorry.
Yet.
Crytek has announced that they'll be updating the Crysis community on what's going on with the game at their studios on a weekly basis. So every Wednesday, I believe, they're going to be updating crymod.com, telling you what they have planned for the game and the patches and the SDK development, which is you know a nice little way to keep people interested in it and let them know what's coming down the pipeline. I guess they haven't done their first update yet, but their first update is that there's going to be updates. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. But it's crymod.com, if anyone's interested in that. Also, Bethesda's Todd Howard, who's the executive producer on Fallout 3, went. I guess they maintain a blog on IGN's developer blogs. He talks about how they went back to Fallout 1 for their inspiration for Fallout 3 because they agreed with the tone with that more and went into the old design docs that were done by Chris Avalon the designer of the first game, and they've got some kind of nice like bullet point things they pulled from that that I thought were kind of cool. If you're a Fallout fan, you'll appreciate these. Number one is mega levels of violence. When people die, they don't just die. They get cut in half, they melt into a pile of goo, explode like a blood sausage, or several different ways, depending on the weapon you use.
Awesome.
So is this game going to be marketed towards children?
Oh, of course,
We already know what's going to be on Fox News 6 months from now.
Yeah, exactly.
Two, there is no right solution. Like it or not, the player will not be able to make everyone live happily ever after. Number three, there will always be multiple solutions. No one style of play will be perfect, and you know there are a bunch of other ones that he kind of glosses over. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting little insight into how they're taking you know the original isometric you know turn-based combat thing and trying to take the ideas behind it, not necessarily the same methods, but the ideas that led them to that game and take it in a different direction and come up with something that's you know in the same spirit as the original. And you can find that on our Delicious Links.
Well, I mean, I'm really impressed by that, mainly because I know so many people were upset about them going to a first-person perspective anyway, expecting that they were going to turn Fallout into a shooter. And you know, this really shows that they're actually approaching this as an RPG, that it's not just going to be you know, some mindless shooter.
Right. I mean, they are definitely putting a lot of thought into it. It is going to be you know first person perspective. It is going to be basically a shooter ish thing. Although there's going to be a lot of dice rolling you know behind the scenes. But it's definitely in the Fallout world, and they're keeping a lot of the you know philosophy of the Fallout universe alive, which I think is you know, just as important as the gameplay itself. I mean, I love you're not going to find a much bigger Fallout fan than me. I love the first two games, like they're in my top five games of all time. But I think that you know there are other great games as well, and there are other great styles of gameplay as well. And if you can do a well executed game in a different style in that same setting, I'm going to like it. So,
well, One aspect that I think is particularly interesting is long ago I saw you traveling through Stranglethorn.
No!
Stop it. God.
Not yet.
Must be right. Properly done.
Right. Always keep them wanting more, Luke.
Yes. So the last item on our list before we take a few questions is a happy 10 million subscribers to World of Warcraft.
Yikes.
They finally cracked it. It was a long time in coming, you know.
10 million people.
Can we start listing countries that have fewer than 10 million people living in that?
Yeah, there are quite a few of those.
Yeah.
I forget which country it was. I saw something, you know, WoW surpasses population of, you know, and like economy of you know, various small countries. So it just keeps going, you know. Well, and I don't know. Do you suppose I don't suppose they're taking numbers off when like when Gary, if you let your account lapse, would they tick the number down?
I think these are 10 million regular players.
Yeah, they
in fact published as part of the press release, they published the formula for how they compute the numbers, and it's basically anyone with whose subscription has been active in the last 30 days. That does include people who recently bought the game and are in their first free month. Right. I don't know how big a number that is, and obviously in Asia, where in countries where it's all, you know, it's venue based gaming, and people don't have individual monthly subscriptions, it's computed a little bit differently. But it's basically anyone who logged on and played, you know, with their unique account any time in that last 30 days as well.
Okay, so let's assume these are 10 million players. Okay, I have a list of countries by population, and last time they announced it was 9 million players, right? So since 9 million players, when there are more people playing WoW than living in Austria and Switzerland, now there are more people playing WoW than living in Sweden, Guinea, Bolivia, Haiti, Rwanda, or Serbia.
And twice as Serbia as live in Norway.
Yeah, and the GDP of Azeroth is probably greater than most of those countries as well. They're making something like it's over $1 billion a year, I believe, in profit on that game. So
in profit or revenue?
Oh, it might just be revenue, but again, that would be the same as a GDP. Right. It's just kind of operating revenue rather than profit. But yeah, $1 billion a year is probably bigger than quite a few countries in the world as well. So
do you think they make as much per user in Asia as they do in the US, where there's the $15 a month flat fee?
No. Yeah, I don't know how it works.
I wonder, because I know that over half the 10 million are from Asia, and I think the US number is around 2.5 million.
But there are, you know, I actually thought that they were going to not hit 10 million until after Lich King came out at the end of the year. They've hit that already. They also mentioned in the press release that they're about to roll out a version for Russia. Russia apparently has never had World of Warcraft. That's a pretty big market. So the question really becomes is how high can it go?
Yeah, what's the critical mass?
It's got to plateau at some point, but wait. I think they'll probably... My prediction would be they'll hit at least 12 before we see any kind of drop-off. I think there's still room for it to grow.
I think... Yeah. I want to say 15.
I think... I don't know. I think
I'll
we're close
optimistic.
To it. It was at 9 for so long that I think we're probably very close to the plateau. But maybe Lich King will prove me wrong.
Yeah, it's definitely the growth has definitely slowed quite a bit, but it's...
They always get a big boost from the expansions, because remember, a lot of people who let their subscriptions lapse,
right,
but who are players, you do have characters, will come back into the game. I actually haven't played. I'm counted as one of those 10 million because I haven't counted my subscription, even though I haven't played in a little while. But there are probably a lot more people who, you know, if they haven't played for a few months, will cancel their subscription, knowing they can jump back in and their character will be waiting for them when Lich King comes out. So you'll see a boost from that. You will see a boost. I don't know how many territories there are left in the world for them to roll it out into. Like I said, Russia is, I guess, the next big one. I do think it'll continue to grow in some of those other markets like Asia as well.
Well, they just had that big advertising push here. So, you know, maybe I'm sure that had something to do with their growth.
Well, they got Mr. T.
What advertising push? Oh, this one?
I'm Mr. T and I'm a night elf mohawk.
That sounds familiar.
I like the Shatner one best.
Yeah, Shatner's awesome.
Shatner's always good.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to reactivate my account, actually, because I was just selected to pay $100 for a figure print.
Dude.
That's right.
Wow, I wish I could be selected to pay $100 for something.
Well,
dude. You know.
Chuck, I have elected you to pay $100 for this pair of scissors on my desk.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, so let's take a few questions, shall we?
I have one.
No, you don't.
All right, I think this one's for you, Logan.
Hi, guys. Chris from Portland here. A gentleman had called in with a question last week about mech games, and he had mentioned there weren't very many out there, and I did realize there's one where you can jump into a giant mech, and that is in Battlefield 2142. They have some mechs in there you can jump into. In any case, my question this week is, I'm a gamer that does not need the best and the brightest new equipment. I don't need to see every bead of sweat flowing down a character's face. In fact, I run a GeForce 6200, and it plays everything I have perfectly up to oblivion and just wonderfully. So I'm wondering, thinking about getting a new video card, but I don't want to spend $250 on one. Any ideas on what I might be able to get that's going to run some of these next-generation games really well? Love the podcast, and thank you very much.
Ooh, I think the problem he's going to run into there is AGP. And isn't the 6200 still AGP?
I mean, it also depends on what kind of processor you're running, what kind of video, what kind of motherboard you have. But it's beginning this spring, you are going to see a huge crop of sub-$200 DX10 compatible cards, and even DX10.1 compatible video cards. Again, everybody, don't panic. DX10.1 is not that big of a deal, and even a certain member of the Crytek team has poo-pooed it publicly. So, you know, don't panic about that. But you're going to see a lot of them. Some of them are going to hit around 150. Can't name names just about yet, but you're going to hear about them in the next 2 or 3 weeks.
But yeah, I was just talking to a cousin of mine who's thinking about upgrading. He's got an older model GeForce card. And you know, he was asking me for a recommendation for what he should upgrade to. And you know, I was throwing out, oh, you know, the 8800 DT is a great go-to card if you can, you know, put up the 260 or so that it costs. But then it occurred to me, oh, you know, he's got this old graphics card. That means he's got an AGP slot, an AGP motherboard. So if he wants to update to anything new, he's going to have to update his motherboard, which means he's going to have to update his CPU, which means he's going to have to update his RAM. So basically, it pretty much requires a new, you know, new computer the whole way around. If you want to go,
but you know what? I mean, he's still pretty happy with his system now. So you know what, dude? Use the system you've got now and slowly start building your own PC. It's fun. You'll learn a lot. You'll learn about all the new motherboards and everything that's out there. You know, you can do it piece by piece and not have to sweat and be without a computer for a while. You know, if you just do it little by little. Start buying the parts, researching it.
If only there was a magazine that had a cover story on building your own PC.
Yes. And it began, long ago I saw you.
I also want to comment on his comment that there are mechs in Battlefield 2142. He's absolutely right about that. They were kind of cool, but
yeah, we
really
missed that.
Just tanks.
I forgot about it.
I mean, all they were tanks. I mean, they had a cool HUD, and if you like shot EMP blasts into them, you'd get the weird static image. And what's even cooler is that there's a mod out there for Battlefield 2142 that can change the model of that tank or that mech to look like ED-209 from RoboCop, because it really looks like ED-209.
Nice. Although, like, I'd never really... Even if I had thought of Battlefield 2142 in that conversation, I don't know if I would have suggested it, because it's not the mech-based game he was talking about. I think somebody should make a mod, though, where it's like all mechs all the time in Battlefield. That would be pretty cool.
Hi, everyone at PC Gamer. This is Dom from the message boards. I was wondering what you guys think of Apple's increasing market share and how you think that's going to affect not only PC gaming, but the PC platform in general. I have a very bad vision in 5 years of walking into a coffee shop with my laptop and being the only one there with a PC, and being surrounded by MacBooks, and God forbid MacBook Airs. I'd love to hear what you guys think about this and the constant death of PC gaming stuff that goes on the internet. Thanks.
Well, first of all, let me disabuse you of the notion of all those people at the cafe you're seeing that they're actually using their MacBooks. You know, there's a reason they go to these cafes to hang out, and it's not to do work. You know, so these are sad and lonely people. Don't worry about them.
Yeah. Well, also, ever since Apple switched over to Intel, they're basically PCs. You can install Windows on them. So I mean, it's not going to hurt the Windows, like the game PC gaming market share at all, because those are all PCs that can play Windows games.
Yeah, but yeah, no one actually does that, though.
No, no, no. I know a couple people with MacBook Pros that dual boot. They have OS X, also Windows XP on it. And because the MacBook Pros have 8600 GTs from NVIDIA on the laptops, they can play like Unreal Tournament 2K4.
I'm pretty sure if we did like an impromptu little whistle stop tour right now of Starbucks in the Bay Area.
Oh yeah, no, no,
and,
but no one plays games
everyone who's
on their
using
Macs.
A MacBook. You would not see anyone running Vista.
I mean, fundamentally, I've always gotten the idea that the people who go out and buy Macs are just they're different. They have different needs.
Well,
than
they're
PC
not
owners.
Gamers.
Yeah, I mean, they're not gamers. I mean, PC guys, you know, they want to go in. They want to configure their own hardware. They want to put, you know, upgrade to the newest stuff. And they want to play games. And the people who buy Macs, they want something that's very easy that they can do browsing and, you know, word processing and multimedia stuff. You know, they just have different needs. And so I don't
at the same
really
time,
think this is a problem at all.
I mean, at the same time, the you know, Macs are getting a bigger share of the home computing market, and I mean, EA just announced that they're going to port Spore over to Macs. I think for a
right,
certain
right,
but
I
EA
think Spore
been doing...
is a great game for a Mac user. I mean, that seems to be the sort of game that would appeal to Mac users.
Now, it is worth noting that EA is not. I mean, they've been putting out a lot of their games on the Mac lately, and it's not because they've devoted a whole lot of resources to it. It's because now that Macs are on the Intel processors, it's much easier for them to they call it like a wrapper program that lets them take the PC code and basically put it inside another application that can interpret it and run it on a Mac. So it's not a few extra bucks. Yeah. So it's not like they're devoting a whole lot of resources to Mac gaming, because Mac's just the market there is not very big for gaming. So.
Yeah, the majority of Mac users, if they game, it's going to be casual games. You're not going to find people playing World of Warcraft or, you know, Supreme Commander on their Macs anytime soon.
World of Warcraft, yeah, you see a lot of Mac people playing WoW.
Yeah, a lot of people play WoW.
That was a bad example. Supreme Commander.
Very bad example. Yeah.
Hi, this is Brian Jackson, Niagara Falls, Ontario, Canada, and I just want to start off by saying thanks to the PC Gamer crew. Because of your magazine and podcast, I finally bit the bullet and bought a pretty good gaming PC and have never looked back to my 360. I hate it so much now, and my question actually pertains to this. My friends all play 360 pretty much religiously, and every time I try and invite them over to try out Crysis or Unreal Tournament 3 or Call of Duty 4 for the PC, they always spout the same line. Oh, it's not comfortable. Oh, it's complicated. Oh, it's buggy. It's not accurate as the gamepad. And every time I try and counter them on this with a real point, they just say, it's gay. It's gay. It's gay. And I want to know what I can do to convince them otherwise. Any help with this would be appreciated, and thanks. Bye.
I've played Crysis, and it is completely heterosexual. So just tell them that.
I think you need to upgrade your friends.
You know what? This is a problem that will take care of itself. As soon as they get the red ring of death, just invite them over.
Yeah. No, here's what you do if you want to prove the control pad versus mouse and keyboard support or accuracy, because Crysis does support the 360 control pad. So you can just plug that in and let them go at it that way if they want, and then, you know, embarrass them by showing them what you can do with the mouse and keyboard.
I gotta say though, in my experience, people who think everything's gay tend to be, well.
Yeah, let's you know, leave that out of it. But
as it is,
yeah, that's none of our concern.
Long ago, I saw you travel.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. Ever since I saw a bunch of people playing the Halo 2 PC demo at CES a year ago using gamepads, it just frustrated me so much. It's like I wanted to slap it out of their hands and give them a mouse and keyboard and say, look, this is how you're supposed to play it.
No, and like I was down at EALA not too long ago talking to the team that's developing Tiberium, the new shooter there in the CNC universe. And it's going to be a cross-platform game. So I asked them, okay, are you going to support cross-platform play? Like, no, because there's really no way to level the playing field because the mouse and keyboard is so much more accurate. And, you know, this is coming from the developers, so they have a pretty good idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, the only way it would work is if they nerf the FPS side on PC.
Right. So and you know, by if you want to GIMP one side, by all means, then yeah.
you know, actually, I haven't tried that though. I wonder if in Crysis, when you plug in the gamepad, does it have auto aim turned on?
I haven't installed
Doesn't.
Crysis.
I tried playing it. It was so hard. I couldn't play it. And thank God the game, I could play it slowly, because you need to play it slowly with a gamepad.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Halo is so slow. I always feel like I'm running underwater whenever I play a Halo game.
Yeah.
Can it be Logan's story time now, please?
Oh, yes.
Oh, finally.
So let's give some background information. A little while before the break, before the Christmas break, we had
Ed
Freeze.
Ago, I saw you.
No, wait, hold on.
Yeah, just a moment.
God, you guys just
wait for
Ed Freeze, who's the CEO of Figureprints, the company that does the World of Warcraft figurines that are very high in demand. And we got him to give us one to give away to one of our readers. We held a contest. We got a few entries, and we randomly picked one, which turned out to be the best one, which met all our
rules.
What are
the odds of that?
Some pretty good odds. So the rules were you had to write a piece of World of Warcraft fan fiction within 150 words, and this entry is exactly 150 words, and it's going to be narrated by Mr. Logan Decker. You can begin.
Why should I?
Now he doesn't want to.
I have now. Go.
You why? I mean, you guys, I've been trying.
It's like taking a dog out to walk and he won't
no,
go.
No, I'm not a performing monkey. You know, I
dance,
often
monkey,
do that
dance
throughout the whole podcast, and you guys kept shutting me down. And now all of a sudden you want it turned on.
All right, okay, let's move on then. Let's take some
Okay, wait. Okay. And make sure to cue like some really good background music, like a swell of something, you know, like the end of a movie.
I'm on it.
Something very like atonement, like. Okay. To Xanax, the Warlock. Long ago I saw you traveling through Stranglethorn. The mighty beasts I hunted for Hemet Nessingwary weren't half as exotic as you. Darkly radiant, your succubus could never be so captivating. If my entangling roots would hold you in place long enough that I might profess my love, then I would not think twice about casting it, but I'm certain you have never been taught Tarahe, and my tongue is far too large to speak Gnomish. You have stolen my heart, and if you will not have me as I am, logistics of lovemaking aside, then with my heart, take also my soul. Use it to summon a Felgar to protect you, or, if you aren't your demonology specked, a health stone to keep you well in times of trouble. May my 30 copper speed this letter my love to you. From your beloved, Zabiba.
I only understood
it's the eye, doesn't it?
That. It brings a tear to my eye, all right.
Can we cut for a sec?
Yeah.
Chuck, give me a minute.
Chuck, I think you found your new freelancer.
Well, if that was Peggle fan fiction, then maybe.
There you go.
So that was an entry. The winning entry was
unfortunately, now I'm opening myself up to an avalanche of Peggle fan fiction.
I would actually love to hear some Peggle fan fiction.
I would love
I know.
That sounds like my idea of hell.
So that winning entry was sent in by Stephen Johnson from Colorado. And Stephen, if you're listening, we'll be sending you an email with your key to redeem a Figureprint, courtesy of Figureprints and Blizzard.
And it's a free Figureprint, right?
It's free, that's
right. He's not just winning the right to buy one like Jeremy.
Yeah,
there's nothing
this is
wrong
way
with
better
that.
Than Jeremy's.
Well, it's $100 better, yes.
I hope your character, Stephen, is worthy of the prize.
Maybe they'll be able to get his tongue accurately carved out. Okay, finally on to our playlist.
Logistics of lovemaking aside.
Aha! Okay, finally on to the playlist section. Okay, Chuck, what have you been playing?
Well, I've actually been out sick the last couple of days, but I did get a chance to fire up some Command & Conquer 3 because I haven't played it since the new version 1.09 patch came out. And I have to confess, I'm probably like the world's worst RTS player. You know, like when I'm playing skirmishes, I have to play on easy, and I'm really happy to say now that I can actually beat the game on easy like any time, and I think it's because they've made it so easy that the other side like practically puts a sign on its back saying, "Hey, shoot me here, and I'm not going to attack you."
It's training wheels, Chuck. Training.
No, I know, but in past games, though, in previous games, you know, even on easy, it would give me a pretty good challenge.
Really?
Yeah. I turtle.
Well, no, for RTSs, the easy setting is really generally a good setting for you to practice developing your economy and how you would level up your units and spend your research points. To prepare for, you know, a medium or a multiplayer game. Congratulations. Now you can move up to medium.
Yeah, I can actually move up to medium, and I'll probably get my ass handed to me.
Yeah, and CNC's AI, it was never all that good. I mean, it's okay, but it is absolutely no substitute. It is less of a substitute for online opponent than some other games. And I think Company of Heroes AI was one of the better ones I remember playing against.
It's no sense of a Solar Empire AI.
Well, the one in the beta wasn't that good, but they've got some better stuff in the works. Anyway, so Norm, what have you been playing?
You've basically shoved Sins of a Solar Empire down my throat, so I have been playing that for the past couple days. Played this game called Alpha Prime, trying to work my way through the expansion pack for Arma, which is the spiritual sequel to Operation Flashpoint, and of course more Call of Duty 4 and Team Fortress 2.
And Gary, what have you been playing?
I promised that I would give Crysis a try once I got my hands on the full game, and Chuck sent me a copy. And I went to all the hassle of actually getting and installing a new drive, because as listeners will know, my crappy Plex Store drive didn't like the Crysis disk. So I made a pretty big investment in Crysis. I put a new drive in and everything, and installed the full game, and played it for quite a bit, and I still don't like it. So I'm pretty much done with Crysis.
What don't you like about it?
It's all the stuff that I've said a thousand times before. Nothing has changed. I don't like the feel of the combat. I don't like the trade-off between the speed of the frame rate and the quality of the graphics. It just felt kind of generic. I just don't like it. And you know, I know that Jeremy said that it picks up. He enjoyed the second half of the game much more, but I'm just not willing to play through, you know, many, many more hours of a game that I don't like very much to get to a part that I might like more. So I've pretty much washed my hands of it.
Well, we've done all that we can do. So.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you sending me the game, and I said that I would give it another fair shot, even after playing the demo several times, not liking the demo. But yeah, unfortunately, I'm just haven't been able to get behind it. So instead, I've been playing Burnout Paradise, which is brilliant.
What's so great about that one?
On your Xbox 360.
If you like the Burnout games, then you'll like this. It's one of those things.
Crazy crashes.
If you like insanely high speed, ridiculous racing that is more like being fired out of the barrel of a gun than actually realistic racing, and insane crashes where things explode and blow up and fly over bridges and fall onto other things that explode. It's a game for 5-year-olds basically. But if you still have that little corner of your mind that appreciates, remember when you were a kid when you were taking cars and kind of bashing them into each other and making crashing noises. This is kind of the.
What do you mean when I was a kid?
Well, okay, so you'll like this game.
That was 2 days ago, tops.
They should put the Burnout games on PC. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't be really good on PC, but I guess not.
Because they need 3 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
might have to go to 4.
Now, Jeremy, what have you been playing?
Gary and I have very similar tastes, it turns out, not only in Crysis, but Burnout. I just picked it up today, and I can't wait to get into it. I love that series so much. I haven't played much in the past week, though, because I've been on the road, but yeah.
Hey, you'll have to give me your gamer tag, and we'll play online.
Okay.
Oh man, don't make me get the game now so we can play.
Oh, online is really, really fun. There's all these different challenges you can do, like drive over a bridge from opposite ends and try to crash into each other in the middle of the bridge and Ooh. Stuff like that. It's pretty ridiculous.
Plus, it doesn't have that mode where it takes a picture of your face if you have the camera.
It does have that mode, and I've seen a lot of men's bottoms in the last week.
That has nothing
to do with Burnout, right? Exactly. But
I can't wait.
That's a ringing endorsement for the game, right there. Right.
Yes, exactly. It's funny actually. I was playing with Dr. Jim Preston, who some of you may remember from the old days, and he's a very smart guy. You know, he has a PhD in philosophy and is a fairly buttoned down, kind of very smart person. And I was playing Burnout with him last night, and I took him out, and so I got the little photograph of him, and there he is, kind of like sticking his tongue out and giving me the finger with both hands. It's like it doesn't matter what kind of person you are in real life. Games like Burnout just seem to have the ability to turn everyone into slack-jawed morons. They're just like, oh, fuck you, I'm going to give you the finger.
Okay, so you have just illustrated my point about why I don't play games online anymore. That is exactly why.
A lot of people don't have the camera, fortunately, so you usually don't get a picture. But for people that do have a camera, you are able to see some fun things. You only get a couple of seconds, though. When you get taken down, you've got maybe a window of 3 seconds to pose for the camera. And, you know, if all these people are showing you their ass, I'm just wondering, are they doing this very, very quickly, or are they kind of sitting there playing the game?
They're prepared. Wow.
No, they probably have like a photo, you know, taped in front of the camera.
No, because they're different. You can tell they're different every time. And, if you want to see a lot of
Harrison shots, what?
I think you have to have an ass friend.
The really sad thing is that every picture that you get gets saved automatically into a photo album that you can review through the options at any time. So
okay,
it's kind of like,
so the weird thing about this is that the more that you go on, the more you're selling me on PC gaming.
Because as anyone who plays Team Fortress 2 knows, there are no idiots in PC gaming. They're all real stand up individuals.
So guys, what is like the closest thing to that on the PC that you know of?
I don't know. Maybe someone else would be able to say that. I don't know if they have. There is. Yeah, I mean, the thing I like about Burnout, there isn't really anything quite like it. In there's every other racing game, and then there's Burnout, which is just just completely ridiculous. But the online mode in particular, they've actually done one of the really cool things they've done. With the design of the game is kind of taking all the menus and loading screens out. You know, you start the game, you get dropped into the city, you're racing around. There are no real menus or anything, and even the online mode. If you want to jump into the online mode from the offline mode, you just press a button and a little mini menu kind of pops up in the corner of the screen, and you say I want to play online, and you select the kind of game that you want to play. And it drops you seamlessly into the online world, even at the same position where you are in the current world. So it's like the offline world becomes online without any kind of loading or anything. It's really, really smart.
So, okay, back to Logan. What is it you've been playing this week?
We've got a triple SLI system I'm reviewing right now here in the PC Gamer compound. So I am enjoying Crysis at 1920x1200 on very high. And oh, what an experience it is. Why don't you come over, Gaz, and see Crysis as it was meant to be played?
Is it running at 13 frames a second like the other SLI?
It's running at a healthy and vigorous frame rate. You can read more about it in our April 2008 issue. But when I get home, my neighbors are on vacation, so I have cranked the subwoofer and I'm playing Stranglehold again. When I can hear all the luscious breaking of every single object in the room, everything shattering, bodies flying apart, it's fantastic.
Yeah, that's a fun guy.
Who wrote the book? Yeah. Cooper, what's her name? She should come on over and I'll show a good time for this one.
Speaking of high system requirements, that game also had pretty high
system
requirements.
It does have very high system requirements.
Let's see, and like Norm was saying, I've been playing a lot of Sins of the Solar Empire. I'm hooked on that one, but it just has these really epic long games. That the nice thing about it is you can play it in a window, So I have two monitors, so I max it out on one window, and I'm reading the news and IMing and doing everything else on the other window, and it's nice and slow paced for the most part. So it's something you can do just in the background. It's
but great. Does it run both at the same time? So do events still happen even though it's not the active window?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's always, you can have it always running in the background, or you can pause it when you go do something else.
Oh, that's sweet. But,
and it minimizes well, and you know that always drives me nuts when games don't minimize. Id games are particularly bad about that. I think based on Id Engine, you can't minimize. A lot of games you can minimize, but if you try and bring it back, it crashes or
Steam's
like,
great for
problems.
That. Steam's very well behaved.
Right. Well, I don't know on this machine. Well, this machine has some problems. I'm still trying to work out what exactly is wrong with this one. But it Steam gives me some like long delays before it pops back up on this one. Could be a driver issue. I don't know. But yeah, that's one of my pet peeves because I like to multitask on a lot of things. I like to have two or three things going on at once. I'll forget to put up an away message on my instant messenger and somebody will IM me and I'll just be dying to know what the hell they're saying. And I'll tab out and then, or try and I'll tab out and be frustrated.
No, nothing should ever hijack your system and lock you out. That's ridiculous. Right. There's no reason for it.
But yeah, Sins of Solar Empire does that very well. I'm also looking at the mod boards on sinsofasolarempire.com, the forums. And some people are already getting, they haven't even put out the mod tools yet. People are already, that are in the beta, are already putting in... they're putting in like Star Trek ships already, which which has me excited. I just love the fan the mods for Star Trek and because they always end up being better than the Star Trek games. So it's I think that's going to be brilliant. And the guy that's pulled that off already, he's a guy that was behind one of the Homeworld mods, Star Trek mods that I followed very closely. Several years ago, so I'm excited for that. So I guess that'll just about do it for us, right?
Oh, I actually have one more thing to say, and that Damn. Is... if,
long ago, I...
No, not that. That's not fan fiction. However, if you have ever wanted to become a PC Gamer reviewer, the deadline is closing right now. It's going to be closing on February 10th. We're getting very close to it. We are looking for America's Next Top PC Gamer Reviewer. So this is how it works. North American residents only. Send me a 150-word review of Peggle to Chuck at PCGamer.com with the words Next Top Reviewer in the subject line. Like I said, the deadline for submissions is February 10th, 2008. Failure to follow any of those directions will result in immediate disqualification. And for this first leg, I'm going to be going through all of these. And the winner or the best person out of everybody is going to be asked to write for us a review for an incredibly small amount of money. You won't believe how small the amount of money is, but you'll gain fame and fortune, or no fortune.
Or at least fame.
Yeah, just some fame.
Bonus points for some fan fiction after the review?
If you want to give me some Peggle fan fiction, I will gladly read
Peggle
it.
Peggle Slash.
Bring it. Bring it.
Oh, Peggle
no.
Slash.
In fact,
we may post that.
Bring it.
Yeah. I want to see what that unicorn does after hours.
Why would you encourage this kind of deviant behavior?
Bjorn after hours.
One last announcement. We talked about this last week. PC Gamer and Maximum PC, we now have an official Team Fortress 2 server online, courtesy of Nuclear Fallout. The IP, the server address...
Did you just say Nuclear?
I think you did.
I think you said Nuclear Fallout.
It's Nuclear.
Yeah, Fallout. But you said Nuclear.
Well then.
You're like George Bush.
Yeah.
The website is PCGMaxPC, that's PCGMAXPC.NuclearFallout.net:27015. Just type that in your Steam window when you add servers, and you'll find us there. Otherwise,
it's nuclear. Nuclear.
Nuclear.
I'm just trying to mess with
I'm done.
Head.
Yeah. I'm done.
Okay.
I think
okay.
We're all done.
We're all done. Okay. So that'll be it from us for this week. Be sure to check out PCGamer.com/subscribe to join up for a stint. to email us a question in either text or audio format. The address is pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Or, Jeremy, what's the number to call and leave a message?
Yes, please call, because we only got like 5 this week. We could use some more. It's 877-404-1337, extension 724.
Rated T for Teen.
Sierra Entertainment proudly presents World in Conflict, the most intense strategy game ever created. 5 out of 5, easily one of the best gaming experiences of 2007. GameSpy.com. 9.5 out of 10, GameSpot.com Editor's Choice. A PC Gamer Editor's Choice Award winner, 93%. IGN.com's 94% Editor's Choice. War is coming home. World in Conflict. Available now for the PC.
Logan, you have the most melodious voice.
I would argue that all WoW fanfiction is vulgar.
Yeah, that's...
Chuck's getting an iPhone.
Good point.
Oh my god, did I say that loud?
I'm also like the last person I know who doesn't have an iPhone, so I need to join the club. I need to be that lemming that
It's a good
up.
Club.
Yeah, I know.
It's a fantastic club.
It's not a good club.
Gary, you're not already sour on the iPhone, are you?
No, I'm saying... Oh, I thought you were saying that it's the club was people that don't own an iPhone. That isn't a good club.
No, that's
a very sad club.
That is a terrible club.
Yeah, see, I'm trying to move from that club over to the iPhone.
Yeah, that's not a good club.
But so far, they're not letting me in, so I'm trying to get to the right password.
You want to get out of that club.
The only password is, here is $400.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
And here's $80 a month for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I'm $60. I'm having trouble with that password though. So actually saying that password,
it is a tricky one. How do you say Tarahe? Taurahe,
as in the Tauran language. I think it's Tarahe.
Tarahe.
I've never had to actually say the word.
Quit giggling.
No, just remember that if you mispronounce or get anything wrong at all, you're going to be beset upon by thousands.
I am all too aware.
10 million, actually.
Yeah, 10 million.
Ten million Warcraft customers are going to be coming to you.
My tongue is far too large to speak Gnomish.
I would suggest that the level of hardcore WoW players that not only know what Tarahe is but can actually know how to pronounce it is probably limited to like 3 people at Blizzard and maybe a half dozen players.
I don't want to crush 3 hearts, you know? This is supposed to be fun for everybody, not heartbreaking, but whatever. To Xanax, the Warlock. Wait, is that gay? Is this guy...
That wasn't...
Okay. No, that was part of the story. Here we go, okay.
Logan, what have you been playing?
God, I just froze. I'm sorry. Chuck, can we go to Chuck first? I totally froze.
He was playing some World of Warcraft fanfiction,
apparently. And PCGamerPodcast.com. Wait, no, what am I saying? The address to email us a question, either... Don't laugh at me. Either okay, I'm going to start that over. Can I do that?
Yes.
Oh, I saw you.